development team, give a warm welcome to everybody, and particularly the OnSemi Cultivate team for taking the time out to help us design what I think, what we hope and think will be a very interesting and exploratory conversation. I wanna highlight that this is really an experiment for us, a couple things in kind of this new format, and your feedback is always welcome at the end of the conversation. And also just reiterating what our topic is, experimenting with org designs with millennials in mind. And the important thing is, this is an exploration for us. We are not saying that any of our panels are experts in org design regarding millennials. They bring a great deal of org design expertise. And we've got a group of millennials that we're going to be hearing from. And this is really an exploration on what does good org design look like when you think about millennials. And to kind of set the context for how this got started, I'm going to turn it over to my co-designer and co-facilitator, Adam.
Thanks, Eddie. Hi, everyone. So it came up, the topic came up probably, I think it was in our community conversation in December, where there was a discussion being had about power and decision-making. And then the topic, as they often do, drifted into inclusive decision-making, and then naturally it fell into millennials and intergenerational working. So it kind of occurred to me that we often have discussions about millennials in the workforce without any millennials actually at the table of the discussion. So we're making a lot of assumptions and proposing different ideas with no representation of all the different generations. So I thought it would be a good topic. So I reached out to Cultivate, which is an affinity network group that we have on Semiconductor, that's really designed to foster different work practices across all of the different generations that are in the workplace. And then we've got Andrew and Kristen here today, who's going to participate in the discussion, and they're really leading the whole effort within OnSemi. So that's kind of what sparked the whole discussion. So thanks for Andrew and Kristen taking the time to join us in this discussion.
And so the format that we're going to use today is a series of what we're calling fishbowls. So Adam's going to, we're going to start off with hearing from the Cultivate team on OnSemi. We've got some questions teed up for them about millennials in the workforce. What do they want from a well-designed organization? Then we're going to turn to a panel of three org design experts. We've got Craig McGee, Nuala Campani, and Paul Tolchinsky. And I'll just say thank you all very much. And if you wanted to have a heavy hitter list of org designers, these are three people that would be, you know, on your list. So as I was thinking about the breadth of experience and even the coverage globally of where they've worked and lived, I'm very excited that they're going to bring a really holistic and very diverse perspective to this. So we'll start out with the Cultivate team, have some questions that they're going to be sharing with us regarding millennials and multi-generations and what they want in an organization. Then we're going to go to the org designers, have them confirm what we hear, what do they think in their reactions to what they heard. Then we'll go back to the Cultivate OnSemi team to say, okay, you know, what did you hear? What are your reactions? What would you add to the conversation? And then we'll kind of end it by opening it up to a more broader discussion for those that are calling in. If you don't want to use video or voice, you can also use the chat. We'll also, you know, an opportunity at the end to have you add your perspective. Each of those kind of three sessions will be about 10 to 15 minutes in length. So that's kind of the process that we're going to be using. So with that, Adam, you want to get us kicked off with the group discussion or the fishbowl number one?
Yeah, sounds good. So we'll start with the first question. I think Eddie just asked it. So Kristen and Andrew, as you're running the various training offerings that you have and things that are on Semi, what are you hearing that millennials want from the workplace? What do they want from a well-designed organization?
Kristen, you want to take point or should I?
Go for it.
Okay. So one of the things that we see most or hear most from millennials is that they want movement in the workplace. So a lot of people hear that and think that, okay, they want upward mobility. They want to be able to climb the corporate ladder. But what we actually hear a lot of is they want horizontal movement as well. Job rotation programs are something that are really popular right now because millennials and new people who are entering the workforce are able to jump around every 6 months or year or whatever it is to try out different jobs, figure out different responsibilities in a professional career, and see what it is that they really like.
I think another piece would be the having the option to be on a project from a different team. So for example, I'm in human resources, but being able to partner with, let's say, our communications team on a project, you really get a better idea of what each department does. And then it also makes all of the different departments within the organization work better when everyone can understand each process. So that's something that we're hearing a lot from the millennial generation is they want to be able to work not just within their sole department, but they want to be on projects with other departments as well.
And then how about on the innovation front? I know on Semi, we've got a huge innovation cultural effort right now. Is anything around the innovation or the sharing of ideas, that side of things that you're hearing?
I mean, I would just say inherently, millennials these days being so enveloped in technology, and don't take that word in a negative context, they just, it's integrated into every facet of their daily life, that they are so naturally innovative with everything that they do. I mean, how many people or how many millennials do you think have smart homes now because it makes their life more innovative and more efficient just on a day-to-day? Yeah, Adam's over here raising his hand, and I'm the same way. It's just because that's the way their brain works. They want to be innovative, and they want to get, you know, collective ideas, and they want to be able to share with each other and figure out what's the best way that we can do things and how can we improve everything in our day-to-day life, whether that be, you know, personal or professional.
I also think it's creating an environment where your ideas are heard and you are allowed to go and kind of take those risks, small or large, to be innovative and create a new process or innovate a process that's already in place. I think we're hearing from millennials that, you know, from the top down, they're hearing executives say, we want to be innovative, but then they're getting pushback from their direct managers or the middle managers where they're not able to take these innovative ideas and run with it. So kind of creating the innovation idea throughout the company and not having it be at the top and then kind of stop somewhere in the middle as well.
Yeah, and that's a great point, Kristen. I just want to build off of that too, because there's so many cases where, you know, millennials or new people entering the workforce have these new and innovative ideas and they don't even get the chance for them to be heard in the workplace. But if we actually can design an organization where their ideas can be heard and they can be given approval to go and run with them, once they feel like they have that skin in the game, I think you'll go ahead and see that, you know, great things could be done. It's when people have that motivation and they're able to run with their own ideas that really the most effective work can be done, in my opinion.
So when you're running the you offer obviously the multi-generational workforce workshop on Semi, which starts breaking down some of the myths between the generations. What are some of the common barriers you see between effective different generations working together effectively?
I would say communication is probably one of the biggest ones. Everyone thinks, for example, everyone believes millennials only want to communicate over IM or text message, but what research actually shows and what we found through personal experiences, they actually prefer face-to-face communication. That is the most instantaneous way to get feedback and to get answers to the questions that you have. And sometimes people just see a different generation and they don't necessarily know how to communicate with them because they're making an assumption or they're putting a stereotype on them. You know, baby boomers, for example, don't like technology, but they actually integrate it into every part of their day as well. And they are probably some of the most busy people on email and IM that there is.
Yeah, kind of to build off that, I think it's starting off, kind of to create a better communication channel. So in the beginning of your relationship with someone of a different generation, it's creating what the norm should be. So having those conversations where I could say to my boss, you know, I work best face-to-face. Maybe he works best via text, which is actually true. But being able to work together. So, you know, some meetings when possible, we have face-to-face, but then if I need something quickly, I'm going to text him. So, but being upfront about those, that way you are aware of how that person works best. So you're working better together using each other's strengths.
Nice. And then if anybody from the audience has any additional points, feel free to put those in the chat box. And just while
Adam, I have a question for Andrew and Kristen. I wonder that you said the myths, is where there are like five or a list of myths about millennials that you guys able to kind of collate?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, the biggest myth about millennials is, well, there's a few, so they're job hoppers. But there's actually research done that shows every generation has hopped the same amount that millennials are on track to hop as well. Another one would be that millennials are lazy. But at the same time, you see some extremely hardworking millennials. Think about all the startups. Those are founded by millennials. So you can't necessarily take a whole generation and make it deemed lazy. That's more so personal traits, which is what we try and take the fact of getting rid of these assumptions or stereotypes of generations and turning it into the DISC assessment and going into, it's more of a people thing, not necessarily a generation thing.
Thanks.
I think my favorite point that was made there is really on the talent mobility side and designing for that. I think especially now, I had a conversation with Kasky Lewis Clapper last night about our conference, which we postponed because of the coronavirus. And she was telling me how they've had to basically shut down one business unit and redirect all resources to another business unit that's fully booming in the healthcare industry. And if you can design for that, you know, you've got a workforce that can work across businesses. So you're giving people opportunities across the different areas, but, you know, it's a benefit to the business. So I really like that talent mobility piece. Mm. Any other questions, Eddie?
No, I guess for the, anything else that the OnSemi Cultivate team wants to share about millennials before we go and hear from some more designers and what did they hear or what needs to be clarified?
Well, moderators, what does our time look like for this portion of the fishbowl?
I think it's actually about good time to go to the next topic.
All right, sounds good.
Org designers, Paul, Craig, Nula, take yourselves off mute, and we'll go ahead and start for kind of a recap. What'd you hear, and anything that needs to be clarified? So we'll confirm with the Cultivate team if you heard them correctly before we go into kind of what are the implications.
I mean,
go ahead, Paul.
No, go ahead, Craig.
Yeah, one thing that struck me is we often think about org design having a heavy structural component. But when we look at the other components of systems and processes, it looks like designing effective organizations for that conversation was more focused on some of the processes that we mm-hmm. have for moving people around from team to team, a lot of talent development processes and career development processes. And it seemed like the focus was really more on those elements when we think about design. And related to that, there were some cultural components that I heard, particularly around mm-hmm. some of the innovation. And so I think part of it is really developing and designing that kind of culture that is engaging and open and receptive. Mm-hmm. And I think the last one is kind of supporting what Kristen brought up there around, are there really generational differences around some of these things? Because, you know, I think as I've looked at the different generations, there's always been an interest in having mobility mm-hmm. upwards and lateral. There's always been an interest in being heard and being valued. So I think there are just some really inherent qualities of engaging culture that really cut across the different generations. And I think that's what Kristen was suggesting.
You know, I'm going to build on your last point because it was where I was actually going to start. As I listened to you, I thought, 1975, there was research done on what are the characteristics of a good organization and what makes work great, you know? And I wrote down, I don't remember exactly, but the words that were used in 1975, so 45 years ago, were variety, autonomy, feedback, significance, and voice.
Yeah.
And that doesn't sound any different than what I think I heard from all of you. How it maybe operationalizes itself might be different, right? From a process perspective, or even the tools, procedures, digital apps, whatever it is, how we actually make it work, right? So that was my first reaction was, I don't think there's a generational divide. I think maybe how it operationalizes itself might be different for generations. The second, right, the second thing I thought about is, I don't remember if it was Andrew, you or Kristen, but this notion of face-to-face, right? I always use the phrase high touch before high tech, right? I think we need these interpersonal connections. And it sounds like that's what you're saying. It's, we shouldn't assume because you're more, quote, tech savvy with your smartphones and things like that, that you're not high touch people, or that doesn't drive you first and foremost. And then my third comment is, what's fascinating is I didn't hear anything in what you said about the work itself. Craig, to your point, it's a lot about the things that are interrelated to the work, right? Job rotation, variety, movement, working on different kinds of teams, things like this. But there wasn't anything specific that I heard about what are the characteristics and the content of the work itself, right? If organization design is about grouping activities, tasks, and the works, teams, et cetera, then I was curious about what might be different about the work itself for a millennial.
Yeah, I was going to say that's an interesting point that Paul just made. So I was struck by many of the same things that Craig and Paul have mentioned. And I think it was Kristen who said, when she was talking about communication piece, these are human problems. Humans are innately social. So I think that really, really sort of says it is a lot about how we operationalize, how we look at, our processes, especially our people processes in organizations. And I was also struck by, a lot of this, I think a lot of the generational myths, and we get very confused with life stage. I mean, it's not unusual that, people who are entering the workforce want particular things, and depending where we are in our life stage, that has a huge, I think that's an important driver. So that's kind of where I landed on what I heard.
Yeah, there's one other piece that's striking me, and it was the technology component. I think as this field has evolved, we've kind of given lip service to technology as we design it. But when we start thinking about the different vehicles and modes for communication and sharing information, there's just so much opportunities and options out there. Mm-hmm. People talk about text, email, we got social media, web. There just seems to be a broader impact of technology for designing our organizations. And I don't think that's related to just millennials, but, I think this conversation's brought up their awareness and sensitivity around the different technology modes.
I mean, the thing that struck me about, I, for those of you, I used to live in Europe for quite a few years. And I was thinking about the difference in what I heard from you all than what I might hear from a European colleague who's in your age group, right? I call them the Young Turks. you know, and I mean, and I think, you know, the notion, Adam, that you suggested, which is if we're going to talk about the future of work, we should have the future workers in the room. If we're going to talk about design, we should have the target audience participating in it. And so I have this group in Europe that I call the Young Turks. And I think pretty much everything that you said resonates except for maybe one thing, and that is the word movement. In Europe, people don't move around much. You know, and if they do, it's within a 50 kilometer sort of range, right? They want variety, they want autonomy, they want to be able to ideate and innovate, but they don't necessarily want to move. You don't find Europeans in general moving from one country to another, let alone even within, say, Germany, moving from Hamburg to Munich. People tend to want to stick closer to home and family, quality of life, quality of work life, quality of life before quality of work. You know, and so I thought, you know, it's, I don't, maybe there's a millennial difference between those of us in North America and those of us in Europe. Because I don't think rotation within a location, yes, rotation that would require me to move, probably not.
Yeah, Paul, something, you just kind of struck something for me. I teach in the Cal State system, and so I have a lot of millennial students. And what's interesting is when we talk about, and so my sample size is not huge, but it is interesting. I am struck by how many students put a very large value, you know, an important value on quality of work life. Mm-hmm. And also just really not being super interested in relocating. You know, they're very definitely wanting to stay, you know, in Southern California. So in marked contrast to, you know, I think about myself at that same stage, you know, we couldn't wait to get to the big city. So it's kind of an interesting trend I'm seeing anyway in my student body.
Yeah, Nola, but who wouldn't want to leave San Diego?
You have a point there.
So, you know, if I could just chime in one of the, and get your reaction, you know, when I think about, I hear movement, and also the number of people that I encounter that want stability in there, you know, and regardless of the generation, but I know there is a big population of workers that is something that they, for whatever reason, stability in the workplace and their job is important. And they don't want change.
I think going back to some of the myths again, I think some of those comments that were being made are maybe not generational specific. I think generally humans don't like change. They don't like moving around. They like variety, some anyway. But yeah, anything that's truly disruptive, I think that's just some human nature. I think part of the difference between millennials and maybe some of the previous generations is that we now have the tools and technology that allows us to do it. Whereas in the previous generations, there was, it wasn't even an option. There wasn't even the possibility for it, but now we have the possibility and it's kind of in society becoming an expectation. It just wasn't possible in the past. I'm sure if in the 1930s, people could work remote, they would.
So Adam, that sparked, I'm gonna go back and kind of go back on one of the other comments I had about this isn't as much about structure. Because when I'm starting to think about what you just said, we are creating organizations that have fewer boundaries, that are more fluid, more flexible, that allow people to work across organizational boundaries. And I think that is one thing that's more prevalent in what we're seeing today.
Yeah, I think the notion of reconfigurable, right? I mean, I was in a conference workshop last week where we talked a lot about Spotify as a model, right? And, you know, and other than the languaging around the organization, Spotify is a much more fluid, adaptive, people move around. They move between platforms, between projects, between activities. They get a more holistic view, I think is what I heard from you guys, of the organization and the system. And they diffuse a culture right across all of this, these platforms and stuff, that continues to sort of spark it and energize it in an interesting kind of way, right? But it's non-hierarchical. It's not no hierarchy,
mm-hmm.
right? It's you know, there are structures, but not hierarchy, right? Maybe that's a better way to say it, right? Structures are good to have. Hierarchy, maybe not so much. In Europe, there's a very visceral negative reaction to hierarchy. Less is better always. Structure, not in the form of hierarchy, processes, tools, procedures, yeah. That's fine, right? And that sounds like it resonates with what I think I heard from you all.
Paul, is that, let me clarify, when you're using structure, is that more about role clarity? It's not about hierarchy, it's about what yes. is the process yeah. and the roles?
Yes, it's about roles, it's about handoffs, it's about boundary management, because okay. there's always going to be some form of boundary, right? A mm-hmm. between teams, there's whether it's a physical or an imagined boundary, right? And so it's how do we bridge those things? That's the structure, right? Having overlapping and linking people on different teams, that's not structure, hierarchy, but that is structure, right? You know, and so, you know, again, I go back to the operationalization, right? If we say we want flexibility, we want movement, we want jazz versus symphonic in some way, then, you know, we need some minimum critical of that. And sounds like having minimum critical of that would be sufficient. I mean, I think the question for you all as millennials is, would that be sufficient? Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, that may be a good segue. Why don't we go ahead and let me just ask Nuala and Craig any final comments on this while we turn it back over to Andrew and Kristen and others kind of representing the millennial perspective.
Ready to move on.
Can I add one thing?
Yes.
Okay. So, and I hope I don't take up too much time, and I hope I can explain.
Let us know who you are for those that can't see you, Gil.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Gilly Carranza. I'm a part of the Protégé program, which is kind of flows into what we're discussing here. But when I'm hearing this discussion, I think of deconstruction of the action itself. So let me start by saying, if you think of in its most simplistic form a house, I know that there's got to be a bathroom, a kitchen, a refrigerator, a stove. If I walk to anyone's house on these screens, I know that I could participate in helping around the house, cleaning, cooking, whatever it is that needs to be done. I, before I got this job, was out of work because I was in this crazy gap of I made a ton of money. And so nobody in the middle range would hire me because it wasn't, they thought that I was going to leave for higher money, and nobody in like Ace Hardware, Home Depot would hire me because I was overqualified. Yet I went to a job headhunter and they said, well, let's try and sell your transferable skills, because being in international trade compliance for 22 years, it's very specialized. And no matter where I went, they refused to look at the transferable skills. And if you flip that back on to go into somebody's house and being able to function in anybody's house, on my very first day of walking into that house, I think that may be a way we could start looking at, to Kristen's earlier point of being in human resources, but I'd like to go participate on a project that's in logistics, just because she has no clue of how logistics operates. She could functionally walk into that project on the first day and be a successful participant, because regardless of any function that anybody moves into, there's always going to be, I don't want to call it a hierarchical level, to go back to your point, Paul, but a structure of there's somebody that knows a lot about it, somebody that kind of knows something about it, and somebody that's new to the piece. So as we're looking at this on a go-forward basis, my hope and my thought has always been, how can we deconstruct and break down the label walls like we're trying to do culturally, and just go to what is the function? So I don't know, and I'll again go very simplistic, the Word document team, the Excel team, the Access team. Now that those are all tools that can be used in many different ways, but if you are on that team, tell us what Excel stuff needs to get done and our team will take care of it. Tell us what Word stuff needs to get done and our team will take care of it. Versus, well, this is a logistics project, so, you know, I don't know if Kristen will be able to help or Andrew will be able to help because they've never been in logistics. So maybe if we can kind of frame it around a deconstruction of what actually the actions are versus who you are, what function you're a part of, I think we could build something really special that would allow that kind of mobility and free flow as we move organization to, or as we move throughout our work career.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Thank you. That. I love the thinking. Paul, you sent, or any, let me just open it up to either the OnSemi or the org designers. Of, you know, Gilly makes an interesting point. Paul, you want to share? You in your chat, it's a great distinction, work versus skill set. Mm-hmm. I can apply lots of skill sets to multiple different kinds of work projects.
I had to figure out how to get off of mute. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's, you know, I mean, because I think that what you just said for me says, when you think about designing an organization, what I think I said 5 minutes ago was you design it around units of work. What you said is you design it around skill sets, right? And skills required because those skills have application across multiple different kinds of work, right? And so I think it's, you know, when you think about what's the unit of design, is it a task, an activity, a project, you know, and then how do you bring people together around it? Well, you could, you know, the answer is always going to be what would be the skill set requirements, right? And the diversity, you know, and the diversity of background skills, et cetera, to do it. So, you know, I think we always said, here's the work, and then it requires this amount of capability or capacity, right? As opposed to saying, what would an effective organization require from a skill set perspective? And then figure out how to continuously deploy those skill sets across a multitude of different tasks. Would be a really interesting way to do it.
Yeah, I think, you know, Paul, like you said, traditionally it's been the work, then the implications to the skills. So for me, it's like you can't, yeah, I'm processing, you know, in the moment, but it's like, it's more of an and. I don't know if one would go before the other, but it's Gilly's comments for me is raising the importance of thinking about skill sets in conjunction with the work, because mm-hmm. both are going to vary, right? They're going to change, and they're going to change more rapidly over, you know, over time than it has maybe historically. So
yeah, but if you give me a convening question, project, outcome, problem, challenge to solve, and you say what skill sets would be required to do that, to answer that question or solve that problem, right? Then that group gets together and figures out what the work is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's the opposite.
Yeah, no,
right, but I also feel like that there's got to be that moment or time where, yes, for the majority of that group, you do need that. But from, or at least from what I'm understanding of the millennial set, so Andrew and Kristen, let me know if I'm not feeling you or hearing you right, there's still that opportunity for them to have, as a millennial, to come into that set with all the skill sets in there and have the opportunity to say, I may not have all of these skill sets, but I have a lot of them, and I'd like to try and come in and learn that last two or three skill sets so that I can become a stronger and more complete person for the organization. So you don't have to, I guess I don't want to be misunderstood and say that you need just to look at that, but slowly bringing in people a little bit at a time will make your group stronger eventually over the long haul. That's all I was trying to say, I guess. And correct me if I'm wrong, Kristen or Andrew, if that isn't what you're trying to get at, I don't know. I'm just speculating.
No, I think that's exactly right, Gilly. And one other thing that I actually wanted to add to that, just for to expand on that, is that many of these people that are trying to, that don't have all the skill sets, that are trying to apply for a job or trying to get into a new area, really, they might not just be there because they want to become the best version of themselves. It might be because they're trying to find that version of themselves. I think that that's an important distinction, because they might be taking a job from HR going into logistics because they want to explore what that's like and see, well, maybe I do enjoy this and I do have a lot of skills that could work here. So the work might be interesting and I could do a lot of good for them, but I need to figure out what it is that I enjoy doing on the day-to-day work as well. It's not just because they want to be, you know, the best version of themselves for the organization, but it's because they want to be the best version of themselves for themselves. So you got to consider the personal aspect as well when you're taking a chance on these people.
That's a good point, Andrew.
So if I if I can share something.
Go ahead.
So I think about this conversation, and I think about the work that David Rock did and other people in terms of neuroscience, the SCARF model, and again, what really motivates us from a neural perspective. And one way to look at that is that the millennials have not been entrained out of really the natural tendencies of us as human beings. Whereas when I think about the great generation, the baby boomers, particularly, that there's an entrainment. I was involved in the birth, death, and resurrection of the organization development field for 3 years. We just finished that project. We were intentionally designed as 25% great generation, 25% millennials, 25% Gen X, and 25%. The great generation, and this is the thinking shift that we see in Agile, but it was in that place where these are the founders of org development. They were saying to the Gen X and the millennials, pick us out, we'll coach you, we'll mentor you. Tanya from South Africa, who was a millennial who invited me to this conference, stood up and said, we don't need your advice. We need a place at the table. And to me, that's what I am also hearing. The projections that we have in the older generation, I'm a baby boomer, are not fit for purpose in terms of the level of consciousness that we have now, particularly with the millennials, who are digital natives. They're wired, they're, again, their ability to access information. And whereas a baby boomer might say, don't use your computer, don't multitask, but the baby boomer might say, well, your expectation that I'm fully committed to you 100% of the time is inappropriate, because I'm actually engaged in lots of things. Again, so there's different kinds of mindsets, and that's, to me, where I see the clashes.
So I'm hearing, and I appreciate Gilly bringing up the Protégé program, because that's one of the things that, as an organization, we're trying to do to put some structure around these things, because it's not, we're not talking about structures. I think as org designers, we know structure isn't just the reporting relationships. It's the boundaries and how you resource the work, and doing that in different ways. And the Protégé program is one of the ways that we're looking to do that. So thanks, Gilly, for bringing that piece up. As we think about operationalizing it, we've talked about structure. Nuala mentioned the people processes. What other ways are we seeing that helps operationalize these types of issues?
Adam, who was that directed towards? Was that open or to Kristen and Andrew?
Open, really, as org designers, or even within ON, as we're seeing cultivate and what programs we're putting in place.
Yeah, so just as we think about just looking at the clock, we kind of want to start closing the conversation to say, what are some of your key takes? So kind of to Adam's question, what are you what are the so whats and what do we do, right, Adam? Is that kind of?
Yeah. And so then if Andrew and Chris, if you have any thoughts and reflections on what you've heard as well in terms of closing comments, it'd be great to hear those.
Yeah, I think I think Bill said it right. I mean, we're just looking for a spot at the table to be able to share our ideas and innovation. I think one thing that was interesting was looking at the comment about movement from Paul. I think that also goes back to being a person thing. So I think there's some people who would gladly move and relocate, and I think there's other people who they would like to stay, at least within their general vicinity. You know, they don't want to commute, they don't want to move across the country. So I think that all goes back to the person makeup and not necessarily the generation or the location or even the culture.
I mean, it has to be adaptive, right, Kristen? That's what you're saying, right? I mean, you know, and the design of the organization has to enable a lot more flexibility and adaptability maybe than it used to, right? Because it used to be one size sort of fits all. Whether you liked, even if you had individual differences, the compliance was one size fits all. One size doesn't fit all anymore.
And Paul, I don't think that's just unique to millennials. I think we look at all organizations now and the environment that they're dealing with. You know, the whole notion around agile, flexibility, adaptive. You know, things are just going on so quick in the marketplace. Look at our current situation that we're having to deal with.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think those organizations that are able to do this are likely to survive better because they are able to adapt to things like, in our case, the trades, tariffs. Now every organization has the coronavirus. If you have these sorts of things in place, you can make better use of your resources that you have.
Yeah. So let me pose a question to the group. So when you think about from an org design perspective, what do we do differently? And maybe even suggest, you know, I guess what the question I have is, so what makes it so inflexible now?
So can I actually flip it back and ask another question for the org designers?
Please.
So we were talking kind of earlier and off of Paul's point, we were talking about hierarchy. And hierarchy is something that so many people want to rebel against the hierarchy. And the people at the top of that hierarchy are very intimidating to the people at the bottom. So not only, that's obviously a very big culture thing within companies and within organizations, but how could you guys, you know, how would you change the organizational design to make that hierarchy less intimidating or to deconstruct it entirely?
So I'll give that a shot because I think there's hierarchy inherent in all of our organizations. I think it is what role that the different levels of the hierarchy play and what are their behaviors. The old command and control hierarchy doesn't work. And I think that's what you were suggesting. That's what a lot of people rebel against. But if there is the notion around being more strategic in guiding the organization, being more thoughtful around where the organization is going, being more thoughtful about how we engage the entire organization in those kinds of activities, I think all of a sudden hierarchy takes a different flavor to that.
Paula?
What's that?
Paula, you were going to make a comment?
Yeah, I was just, you know, sort of thinking about what Craig was saying. And I agree that you can't entirely eliminate hierarchy. But, you know, if we think about some of the earlier points around how you use teams in the organization, how you shift decision-making to different places in the organization, you know, how you enable, some of the work to, and we've talked a little bit about work, but how, if you look at kind of some of those enablements, how that is probably where you can kind of make the design changes. And actually I was also thinking earlier about the point about the seat at the table. I think a lot of org design tends to be, sort of a specialist thing. It isn't, making the process more inclusive, I think, is also important. You'll to sort of really look at that. How do we make that a broader based versus kind of the expert model of org design?
Yeah, Andrew, I have a totally big different answer than what you, Craig, I actually disagree with you. Right? Yeah. I don't think hierarchy is inherent. I think structure is inherent, right? There isn't anything in the universe that doesn't have some structure to it. But hierarchy, hierarchy is more, it's a human created concept, right? I like the notion of liberating structures, right? Hierarchy is limiting, not liberating, right? Or at least in the context of the word, right? In our society, hierarchy is seen as much more of a limiting, not a liberating notion.
So Paul, how would you define hierarchy? What's the definition you're using for hierarchy?
Layers of coordination among managers. I mean, I off the top of my head, right?
I just wanted to get that out there so people could have a perspective.
Me, structures are roles, boundaries, processes, ideation processes, voice, ways of bringing things out. These are structures, processes, procedures that we create. We don't need hierarchy. I think if you look across a lot of different companies, you need minimum critical. When I would go to Japan and we would say we're going to have self-management, the first thing out of a Japanese manager's mouth was, well, could the employees decide not to make a product? Not happening.
Yeah.
Right. Or when Craig and I were sitting in this Japanese office, the guy would say, well, could they decide they don't want to make that many products today? Well, not going to happen. So there's some decision processes and mechanisms, right, that keep us focused on the customer and delivering. I think the flip side of what I'm going to say is, I think we need to, we need to reframe what's the role of leadership. Yeah. It's a job design question, right? And we need to, I don't want to use the word re-educate, because I think we educated leaders yesterday to work with yesterday's reality. Today's reality is different, so we need different education, right? And people say, we failed leaders because we taught them the wrong way. I don't think that's true. I think we taught them the right way for the moment. And in the moment, there's another right way, right? So I think, from an organization design perspective, we need to reframe and redesign the role. And part of that role is about letting go, right? That you have to be the smartest person in the room, or that you have all the power and authority. Trust the wisdom of the system. Trust these millennials who maybe don't have 50 years of experience, but have a lot of creative ideas, right?
I think the leadership aspect of it is a great point, Paul. There's, in my mind, I see two kinds of leaders. There is a coach directing the team where and how they should play, and there's a team captain who's there on the court with them. And I think right now we have a lot of coaches, but if we had a lot of team captains, there could be a big shift, and you could see a lot of positive collaboration with those types of leaders.
Yep. And we don't need a lot of back office management looking over either of their shoulders.
Yep.
Other thoughts on the topic? All right, I'm looking at the clock here, and maybe to open it up to people as you kind of, so great conversation, a lot of interesting perspectives. What are you taking away?
Well, I guess I'll go ahead and start. I think one important takeaway that I think kind of came up in a lot of the different points people were making was, you got to be aware that it's not just a millennial thing. You got to look at where these individuals are in their current life stage. That was a great way that Nuala put that earlier. Gen X, for example, in the 90s, had the exact same thoughts and feelings that millennials have now. Some of them don't want to climb the corporate ladder. Some of them want to rebel against hierarchy, as we were saying earlier. It's a life stage thing. So just kind of be aware of that. And since so many people have gone through these experiences before, you think it would be easier to kind of tailor your approach or your organizational design for those people in those stages. But I think it's pretty easy to forget to be conscious about that.
Mm-hmm. I think the thing that
To go off Andrew's part, I think one of the key takeaways is, I mean, I think it's exciting that these conversations are happening and that people are aware specifically about the leadership shift from more so being a team captain than being the coach. I think you see in organizations that operate really well, that's kind of the style that that leader plays. So I think it's an exciting time to hopefully see more of that across different organizations.
Okay, Paul, Craig, Nuala, Adam, and anybody else on the line, anything that hasn't been shared that you can maybe kind of ask Paul, Nuala, and Craig for kind of your key takeaway?
Great. From my point of view, I think in the chat box we were just talking about, I think what's really important in this overall conversation is those that will live the future have to create it. And those of us who have lived the past have experience that maybe helps facilitate the process of deliberation to co-create, right? But I think this whole point of the world, if the world is going to become the millennial world or the Gen X world, we need to do a much better job of making sure that they're co-contributors and partners in this process, right? I think it'd be presumptive of any of us to try to design for any other group. But I probably have always lived that axiom, but I think it's even more important that millennials are speaking out more to have a voice, which I think is
important. Daryl Wapshaw. Mm-hmm.
Nuala, Craig?
I just keep going back to the labels we're using. You know, Bill, great generation, boomer, millennials, you know, Gen X's. You know, we're all people. And I think we've got a lot of common characteristics. And Paul, I agree with you that I think there are some subtle emphasis, you know, like the millennials may be more vocal about some things. But I think there's more commonality across those different categories, if you will, than differences. And the OnSemi group, you know, you run your multicultural workshops. I don't know whether you can affirm that or that you find some differences.
So I was just struck by the points about leadership and the fact that a lot of what we're doing is preparing leaders kind of for the past versus the future, for sort of current circumstances and future circumstances. And I think, you know, given what's happening in the world at the moment, that rings very true. And obviously that has profound implications. You know, I love what Paul said about it being reframing the role of leadership. It's a job design issue. And, you know, when we think about the impact of leadership on the culture of an organization and so much of what we've talked about, you know, how we redefine processes, procedures, structure, leadership has a profound impact on that. So I think that that's a very kind of interesting and productive kind of node there.
Thank you all.
I think for me, it's just reinforced the importance of designing for flexibility and not being too rigid. If we're going to have, people working across different teams, different projects, things like that, even I'm in HR now. Even you think about our HR processes, it's like, well, you want to go do something in supply chain and you're in HR. It's like, I need to put like a department code in Oracle here. It's like we've our systems are actually designed to enforce the rigidity of our organization. So being flexible in everything we design is a good reminder for me. That was a good takeaway for me.
I'll add, looking at the clock, we got about 30 seconds left. So I want to thank everybody from OnSemi. I want to thank our org designers very much. I guess the one thing that I appreciate that stood out for me is kind of said at the beginning, it's the design and then operationalizing it. The leader component, the processes, I think as I'll say for myself as an org designer, I maybe separate the two in the, you know, org design and org development. And as a field, I think we need to bring them more closer together. Mm. And thank everyone for just an awesome conversation and your insights.
Hey, Danny, thanks guys.
And stay healthy, everyone.
Yeah.
Take care, everyone. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks, everyone.